Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Opinion. High Sky Wing Flight Provides Once-in-a-Lifetime Experience by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Every few months, I like to gaslight myself into being an adrenaline junkie. Sometimes it works. Sometimes I just laugh at myself and move on. But last week at the airshow media meeting, I shrugged my shoulders and climbed into the barely 4 foot wide back seat of an LJ-335. If your plane knowledge is anything like mine, LJ-335 doesn't mean much. If you're not like me, then you know this type of fighter plane, or at least the one at the CAF High Sky Wing, was used during the Korean War. After pulling myself onto the wing and channeling any childhood ballerina flexibility left in me, I finally got my 6 foot body through the roof and into the tiny space. Lauren Munt, a digital content producer at television station KOSA, climbed in the co-pilot seat, followed by a much more graceful entrance from 6'4" pilot Donnie Hefner. The three of us put on our headphones and mic sets. Hefner started the plane, closed the roof opening, and took off toward the airport runway. At this point, I started to feel the nerves. I don't mind flying if I complete my pre-flight ritual, but between the sun beaming through the plane's clear top, my claustrophobia, and the fact that I could see every Hefner switch, flip, and button click, deep breaths and sweaty hand fidgeting quickly ensued. Before I knew it, the two-blade propeller at the front of the plane was spinning at full speed and we were leaving the ground. I've been in quite a few six-seater planes, so I already knew the turbulence sensitivity difference compared to a commercial Boeing 737. Yet this turbulence felt a little more real. Because I was technically in the back of the plane, every time we would bounce, my head hit the ceiling. Also, the plane would create a silent pause. So for someone quietly panicking in the back bench, this was a little terrifying. However, after we got to our cruising altitude of 4,500 feet, I started to enjoy our mid-morning stroll over Odessa. Once we were in the air for a few minutes, I was really able to clock in what I was seeing. From the ground, I don't think I've ever realized just how vast our surrounding areas are. And something about being in that miniature metal can forced me to truly be in the moment. Massive solar farms are planted far from town, along with bright blue saltwater pools at the sand mines. The Monahans sandhills seem minuscule compared to their substantial in-person impact. Despite my preceding jitters, my hour in the sky felt significant. My 13 months in Midland, every friend and connection, every feature and event, all fit into this small square radius. And I recognized how grateful I am to have spent time in West Texas. After we safely landed, I was ready to leave the sauna, but the experience was truly once in a lifetime. It's an intimidatingly different world from a vintage aircraft, but don't let your apprehension stop you from that same enlightenment. The CAF High Sky Wing does flights year-round. Leave a message at 432-254-6182 with your name and contact info to schedule.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, September 7th. Odessans for a Bright Future kicks off bond campaign. Odessans for a Bright Future kicked off its campaign Wednesday to advocate for Ector County ISD's $436,109,000 bond issue at United Pump and Supply. Sarah Moore, chair of the PAC, owns and operates the business with Clay Moore and Riley Hunter. Members of the committee, plus teachers, ECISD board members, business people, and a representative from the city came together to show their support. Moore noted that Wednesday marks 62 days until the November 7th election. That's not a very long campaign time. It's very important that our residents, our citizens, inform themselves about the details of the bond. The Political Action Committee has a website, OdessansVoteYes.com, and can see all the details and figures for the bond, Moore said. She added that the ECISD website also has details about the bond. The bond would not affect ECISD property taxes. They would remain the same if it passes, Moore said. There are three propositions that have to be divided that way by law. Among the items in Proposition A are a new middle school to be located in the western part of Ector County, a career and technical education facility on the south side, new transportation building, new transition learning center, technology, maintenance, a complete renovation of the Permian High School auditorium, replace outdated instruments, performance risers for all middle school choirs, classroom instruments for elementary campuses, uniforms for middle school bands, and mariachi, JROTC facility needs and complete replacement of classroom buildings and barns at the agriculture farm. The second proposition is to reseal the concrete at Ratliff Stadium, which is cracking, and also lighting for the parking lot. Proposition C is to build an indoor training facility at Odessa High School and replacing artificial turf at Permian High School's practice facility. We really hope to get all three propositions passed, Moore said. She added that they are all priority items, and she noted that the repair and maintenance will touch all ECISD campuses. Moore said the career technology education facility planned for the south side, if the bond passes, will serve as a home campus for students, which would alleviate some of the overcrowding at Permian and Odessa high schools. Students can choose to attend high school at the CTE facility and get their full high school curriculum rather than having to bus back and forth. That is designed so we can help relieve some of the overcrowding at the high school level. It doesn't fix everything, but it's a step in the right direction, Moore said. She added that anytime you build something in an area of town, businesses pop up, and a new middle school in the western part of the county would likely do that. It's a way to attract and build more infrastructure where in Odessa, which is very much needed, Moore said. District officials have said that this would be the start of a series of bonds to take care of district needs. Moore noted that there is nothing planned, but it's a great step. If you compare our situation with our neighbor city, Midland, they are working on passing a $1.4 billion bond. I'm sure they have their plan, and I wish them luck with that. We're in a similar situation. Both school districts require a lot of upgrades and upkeep and changing to accommodate our growth. But to me and to the members of this committee, we feel like this bond for $436 million is the best first step to take, Moore said. Once we get this portion done and get the building and everything completed, I think we'll be in a position to take the next step. When or where or how much, I can't tell you, but it's a move in the right direction. The future's here. It's no longer the new millennium. We're here, and so the future is coming faster and faster all the time. This is our first opportunity to make a step toward that and to prepare our students for that, she added. the district has made major strides in being fiscally responsible by paying down debt early, so interest payments were saved, which created some liquidity. That allows us to bring forth this bond without a rate increase over what was paid last year, Moore said. That doesn't mean necessarily that the appraisal district won't change the value of your home or that other elected districts won't change, but for ECISD, the tax rate will stay the same. It will not be affected by this bond. She encouraged people to look at OdessansVoteYes.com and the ECISD website. You can register online to volunteer. We will begin having all these volunteer sheets available where you can scan a QR code and register with your contact information to volunteer. Also, we encourage you not to rely on social media for your information and your facts because it's usually more opinion than necessarily facts. Not to say everybody is wrong, but we have the facts about the bond and the details on our website, Moore said. This is a community effort. We don't want this to be a political issue. Blue versus red or division among the areas of the city. This is a community effort for a community benefit, so it should benefit all citizens and all residents of Ector County, she added. Kevin Searcy, a PAC member, a lifelong resident of West Odessa, said his role in the PAC is coordinating all the data, whether that's designing the website, creating a quality plan on how to target voters, understanding where they had issues in the past, and communication on the data, including things like tax compression. Our goal is to put it out there in more infographics, understandable, while still being completely true to the facts, Searcy said. He added that he thinks this bond is pretty well suited for all of Ector County. I'm really happy that we've had a commitment from the board members on a far west, very far west middle school. Anybody that deals with traffic on University Boulevard in front of Odessa College knows that population's coming out west every single day. I hope that alleviates a lot of that. We're not only just touching people with kids in school, but we're actually impacting infrastructure immediately, Searcy said. He added that he's also excited about the much-needed CTE facility that would be built with the bond passage. We have a population here that is energy-driven. That's not something we see going away. That's what I do, and my day job is an energy consultant. I see our area growing exponentially over the next 25 to 30 years, Searcy said. Workers are also needed, and not just in energy, but plumbers, heating, and air conditioning specialists, and more, he added. Mary Kaywood, a PAC member who will be scheduling meetings and sessions with people and groups, said she thinks the bond package is a great response to people's needs and desires. So once they recognize that, I truly believe that they'll be excited and that is where we'll catch fire and continue to ignite and spread that fire and build the excitement to vote yes. Build the excitement to come and talk to my neighbors. If they have questions or concerns, come and talk to my employees. They have questions and concerns. I truly believe once they know the facts and benefit, the benefits of this bond, they'll be excited and they will turn out to vote, Kaywood said. The feedback so far has been pro and con, but she appreciates those who bring forth their concerns. I truly welcome that as a PAC. We truly welcome that because it also tells us where we need to clarify our messaging. Because if you have a concern about this, that tells us we need to communicate better. We need to communicate more. We want to be able to assuage those concerns, because I promise you, it's not the first time we've heard them. We've put serious thought into how we can respectfully and creatively address that. As Moore said, Kaywood added that the bond is not perfect. We are not striving for perfect, but we are striving to take steps to move forward and to move us in the right direction. I truly believe that's where the excitement will come from, Kay Wood said. She added that once people have all the facts and get the full picture, they will be able to get more yeses. It details how K through 12 systems are accelerating learning, making gains. Chiefs for Change, a bipartisan network of district and state education leaders, today released Accelerating Learning, How K through 12 Systems Are Moving Forward and Making Gains. The report outlines strategies for improving academic achievement at the start of the 2023-2024 school year, a time when, by and large, America's students are far behind. It points to districts and states that are improving academic performance in key areas. Many of the initiatives featured in the report are funded with federal COVID relief aid. The spotlights in the report include Ector County ISD's high dosage tutoring. Fidelity is critically important. Evidence-based methods for virtual tutoring in Ector County. Students in Ector County Independent School District who participated in virtual tutoring demonstrated up to a year and a half's worth of growth on test scores. Simply giving a tutoring session and hoping for the best was not going to be a strategy for us, Superintendent Scott Meary said in the report. Implementing the program with fidelity was critically important. Our students needed to accelerate at a rapid pace, so we established a rigorous framework. I am incredibly pleased with the progress that we made. Through adversity, and this community has had a lot of adversity in just the last 4 years, they have risen. For the first time ever, our school system is rated a B in the state of Texas. Bold action for kids, high leverage strategies for statewide improvement in Tennessee. Former Tennessee Education Commissioner Penny Schwinn developed a comprehensive strategy that helped distinguish the state as a leader in K through 12 during and after the COVID pandemic, and that continues to drive progress today. The strategy is focused on several key areas, including early literacy, high dosage tutoring, and building the pipeline of talented teachers. State test results showed in June an increase in academic proficiency across all subjects and grades. There was an 8 percentage point increase in student proficiency in English Language Arts, ELA, and math since 2020. The challenge I offer to all of us is that we turn the possibility into the reality, Schwinn said. Make bold action for kids, the expectation, not the exception. We all want the same thing. Community Partnership for Learning in Beaufort County, a major element of the pandemic recovery work in Beaufort County School District in South Carolina, is a formal partnership that established extended learning sites after school at area churches and other community organizations. We hire retired educators and even some of our own educators who want to work additional time, Superintendent Frank Rodriguez said. We train them and look very closely at what our data is telling us about student needs in reading and math, and then we provide that information about what the general and collective needs are to the individual sites so they can plan and be purposeful about the work that takes place through the program. Beaufort County surpassed pre-pandemic results in ELA on the 2022 state assessment, with children earning the highest ELA scores in the district's history. In addition, the district projects, based on its analysis of spring 2023 state test, that there will be significant gains when the official results are released. Schools can't do this work alone, State Resources for Local Impact in Indiana. The Indiana Department of Education, under the leadership of Secretary Katie Jenner, implemented a plan to improve student achievement that involves tracking data on longitudinal outcomes after high school. ensuring districts use curriculum grounded in the science of reading, training teachers to use evidence-based instructional methods, and supporting intensive summer learning and enrichment opportunities. Students who participated in Indy Summer Learning Labs in 2022 showed statistically significant academic growth, exceeding pre-pandemic learning rates and outperforming children who did not take part. Based on program-specific pre- and post-assessments, after one summer, kids in the program saw an average score increase of 25 percentage points in ELA and 24 percentage points in math. "We have to acknowledge that schools can't do this work alone," Jenner said. "I often ask myself how I can take the state's resources and strategically deploy them locally, understanding that the greatest impact always happens at the local level. It can be done. High-quality curricula for boosting achievement in Indianapolis. Research has shown that one of the best ways to improve student learning is to give teachers high-quality instructional materials and the support they need to use those resources well. In math and ELA, children in Indianapolis Public Schools, IPS, performed higher on state tests than before the pandemic. Among large districts in the state, IPS had the highest growth on ELA. The gains, while modest, reflect the district's steadfast commitment to students. This is what we have to stay focused on to prove what is possible for our students, prove what is possible for our teachers when they have really strong instructional practices combined with the grade-level, content-rich curriculum our kids deserve," said Superintendent Alicia Johnson. The report is a resource for leaders who want to know about strategies that are leading to measurable academic gains. Systems are using these approaches in a variety of contexts, says Chief of Change CEO Robert Runcie. "They are showing that it is possible to accelerate learning, and they explain how they are doing it. These are examples that others can consider for their own systems. While the nation's report card reflects alarming declines, the gains featured in our report represents bright spots, which what we know from research and these stories from our network, we hope to help catalyze academic progress across the nation this year." Chief for Change engaged the Johns Hopkins Institute for Education Policy in early 2023 to review published research studies and to identify evidence-based approaches that improve student learning. Members discussed this body of research at their annual meeting and described ways in which their systems were implementing sound strategies. Some of the strategies in the report released today reflect established research on what works. Others seem to yield notable achievements, gains, despite not yet having been studied. Chiefs for Change has included examples both from categories to show how systems are adopting promising programs that could make a difference elsewhere. The strategies contained in accelerating learning contributes to success stories documented by Chiefs for Change in previous publications, including its June 2023 report, A Work in Progress, How COVID Aid is Helping Schools Recover, and Need for Sustained Federal Support. As a network, Chiefs for Change operates the largest community of practice for education systems leaders in the nation. The network is committed to working with respected partners to disseminate high-quality research and share impactful practices from members' systems. Pfluger urges Biden official to visit Basin. Congressman August Pfluger, Texas 11, sent a letter to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Director Martha Williams, urging the director to hold a public hearing in the Permian Basin to fully understand the consequences that the Biden administration's decision to list the dunes sagebrush lizard as an endangered species will have on local communities as well as energy and national security. I write to urge the United States Fish and Wildlife Service to hold a public hearing in the Permian Basin regarding the proposed listing of the dunes sagebrush lizard as an endangered species under the Endangered Species Act. Further federal overreach in listing the dune sagebrush lizard exposes an existential threat to our nation's energy independence and national security, and it is imperative that the service hear directly from the community it will impact most, Pfluger's letter in the Daily Caller said. Desert Dash Medical Center Health System Foundation will present a Desert Dash race at 7 a.m. October 7th at Mission Fitness, 8050 East Highway 191. Tickets start at $20 for the 2K race. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit tinyurl.com/BD4B7Y9J. Trunk or Treat Grace Christian Fellowship, 3450 Billy Hext Road, has scheduled a Trunk or Treat event from 4:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. October 29th. For more information, visit tinyurl.com/4BHFE5P9. Expired tags lead to two drug arrests. An Odessa couple was arrested early Tuesday morning after a trooper tried to pull them over for expired tags, saw one of them tossing more than 30 grams of methamphetamine out the car window. According to a Texas Department of Public Safety report, the trooper first noticed the Ford Escape near 16th Street and Moss Avenue, but the driver refused to pull over until they got to the 2100 block of North Hayes Avenue, nearly 2 miles away. During the slow speed chase, the trooper said he saw the passenger throw out multiple clear baggies, and when the car stopped, he found a bag of methamphetamine near the driver's seat along with empty baggies and a scale. The clear baggies that were thrown were collected and weighed 30.6 grams, the report stated. The driver of the car, Jose Cruz Hernandez, 56, was arrested on suspicion of manufacturing delivery of a controlled substance. He remained in the Ector County Jail Wednesday night on a $50,000 surety bond. The passenger, Jessica Calanche, 40, was arrested on suspicion of tampering with evidence and manufacturing delivery of a controlled substance. She is also facing a possession of a controlled substance charge because the trooper said he found one fentanyl-laced pill in her purse. She remained in the Ector County Jail Wednesday night on a surety bond totaling $70,000. West Texas Symphony to begin new season with tribute to Rachmaninoff. The West Texas Symphony will kick off its 61st season this weekend with a special tribute to Russian composer Sergei Rachmaninoff. The concert, which celebrates 150 years since Rachmaninoff's birth, will take place at 7:30 p.m. September 9th at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Rachmaninoff, who lived from 1873 to 1943, was a composer, virtuoso pianist, and conductor. He was considered one of the best pianists of his day, and as a composer, came at the end of the last great representatives of the Romanticism era in Russian classical music. The symphony will be performing Rachmaninoff's symphonic dances. "We're excited," West Texas Symphony Executive Director Ethan Will said. "Rachmaninoff is, in the scheme of what you would call a classical composer, he's actually from the Romantic era, but he gets lumped into the classic category. That music has become more accessible than it has in the past because of how public domain and the copyright laws work. He's been playing more and more by symphonies. It's not the first time in 2023 that the West Texas Symphony has featured Rachmaninoff. In April, the symphony had another concert, which featured his famous piano concerto. This year is his 150th birthday, so it's always been the plan that we were going to do both of these pieces. We did his piano concerto in April, and then do this one in the new season so that we're not overloading a season with two Rachmaninoff pieces, Wills said. Anyone who came to our April performance knows that music was very enjoyable and very digestible. It was almost movie music. It has an exciting way of kicking off our season with a piece that's beautiful to listen to. Saturday's performance will also feature Christopher Theophanidis' Concerto for Viola and Chamber Orchestra and Bedřich Smetana Dance of the Comedians. Theophanidis is an American composer whose work has been performed by leading orchestras from around the world and will be working with the symphony. One of the cool things about this weekend is the guest artist. The composer of the piece that the guest artist is playing is still alive, Will said of Theophanidis. Most of the time we're playing people that have passed away from 200 years ago, but he's still living and writing. He's coming to work with the ensemble, so you're going to hear a piece the way the composer actually wanted it performed. That's pretty exciting. The performance will also feature guest Richard O'Neill on viola. The 2023-24 season will feature and continue with Pops and Family series featuring Cirque Musica Symphonic at 7:30 p.m., October 14th at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. The Masterwork series will return with An American Salute November 11th. The Cirque show is probably the biggest show we have coming in as far as the logistics behind the scenes and the performers, Wills said. We just expect a huge audience for that show. It's visually stimulating, so it's going to be super exciting. The following concert is our Masterworks 2, and that's our Veterans Day program. We have a lot planned for that performance that we're really passionate about. We're honored to do something for our veterans that day through music. That's the first half. Then we have another collaboration with an artist in March. That's a new symphony product. It's premiering with us. You're not going to see it anywhere else for a while. Other performances will include Sounds of the Season on December 2nd, TWTS Spotlight on February 3rd, Wally Minko on March 2nd, Brahms on April 13th, before the season concludes with Fantasy on May 4th. That fantasy show is built for all ages, Will said. The fantasy show is another chance for us in the spring to engage the younger audience members so families can bring their kids out and experience the symphony in a way that is digestible for them. For tickets or more information, go to https://tinyurl.com/3DEN4FWM. 2023-24 West Texas Symphony Season. If you go, what? Rachmaninoff. When? 7:30 p.m. September 9th. Where? Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Where to purchase tickets? https://tinyurl.com/3DEN4FWM. If you go, what? Cirque Musica Symphonic. When? 7:30 p.m. October 14th. Where? Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Where to purchase tickets? https://tinyurl.com/3DEN4FWM. If you go, what? An American Salute to Our Veterans. When? 7:30 p.m. November 11th. Where? Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Where to purchase tickets? https://tinyurl.com/3DEN4FWM. If you go, what? Sounds of the Season. When? 7:30 p.m. December 2nd. where Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, where to purchase tickets. https://tinyurl.com/3DEN4FWM. If you go, WTS Spotlight featuring Ben Fairfield on trumpet. When 7:30 p.m., February 3rd, where Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, where to purchase tickets, https://tinyurl.com/3DEN4FWM. If you go, Wally Minko. When 7:30 p.m., March 2nd, where Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, where to purchase tickets, https://tinyurl.com/3DEN4FWM. If you go, what, Brahms, when, 7:30 p.m., April 13th, where, Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, where to purchase tickets, https://tinyurl.com/3DEN4FWM. If you go, what, Fantasy, when, 7:30 p.m., May 4th, where, Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, where to purchase tickets, https://tinyurl.com/3DEN4FWM. Man killed in crash near Midland. A La Feria man was killed Monday morning in a crash just outside Midland, according to the Texas Department of Public Safety. Gerardo Canales, 37, of La Feria, was traveling north on State Highway 349 in a Chevrolet Silverado when he drove into the southbound lanes 10 miles south of Midland for an unknown reason around 7:30 a.m. Tuesday and hit the left side of a tractor trailer. Canales was taken to Midland Memorial Hospital, where he was pronounced deceased. The 65-year-old driver of the other vehicle, who is from Snyder, was not hurt. Texas PSF Corporation provides increased support for public education. The Texas State Board of Education, SBOE, on September 1st, approved the distribution of $1.56 billion from the Permanent School Fund, PSF, to the Available School Fund, ASF, for fiscal year 2024. These funds will be added to the $600 million in direct contributions to the ASF previously approved by the General Land Office's School Land Board, SLB, from oil and gas royalty revenues generated by PSF lands managed by the SLB. The combined amount of $2.16 billion in PSF revenues received by the ASF will flow to school districts and charter schools on a per-student basis during the school year to support instructional materials, technology, and other educational expenses, a news release said. Another $2.16 billion combined distribution is scheduled for fiscal year 2025. When that occurs, the PSF's total contribution to public education in the 10 years since fiscal year 2016 will be nearly $17 billion. This will exceed the amount distributed in the 20 years prior to 2016, an unprecedented level of increase in the PSF's support for Texas schools. We are extremely pleased to be able to make historic contributions to our current students and teachers, while also preserving the PSF's ability to provide similar support for generations of Texans to come, said Tony Maynard, SBOE member and chairman of the Texas PSF Corporation, the recently formed entity responsible for managing the investment assets of the fund. As schools have started the academic year, we are happy that the SBOE can provide such significant financial support directly to each district on a per-student basis all across the state, said Kevin Ellis, SBOE chairman and member of the board of directors for the Texas PSF Corporation. Car seat event. If you are not sure if your child's car seat is installed properly, come to the car seat inspection event from 9 a.m. to noon, September 23rd at Mercedes-Benz of Midland, 5801 Andrews Highway in Midland. A certified car seat inspector will check to make sure your child's car seat is installed correctly and is the appropriate size for your child. Fall kickoff event, Grace Christian Fellowship, 3450 Bailey Hext Road, will present a fall kickoff event at 11:30 a.m. September 10th. For more information, visit tinyurl.com/YCKKNK77.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, September 6th, 2023. Midland Health Article. Diabetic Cardiovascular Health Focus of Support Groups. Midland Health offers a free support group for all community members interested in learning about diabetic and cardiovascular health. COACH, Community Outreach and Cardiovascular Health, is a group of people diagnosed with heart disease who share everyday experiences or concerns and provide each other with encouragement, comfort, and advice. CODE, Community Outreach for Diabetes Education, is a group of people with diabetes who share everyday experiences or concerns and provide each other with encouragement, comfort, and advice. Both support groups meet at Midland Memorial Hospital and are a chance to share experiences and health desires with others in the community. Midland Memorial is passionate about supporting the health goals of all its patients and community members. The support groups are free and open to the public. They provide an open and inviting space so community members of the same journey can connect and feel buoyed by others who have traveled the same path. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention report that approximately 650,000 Americans die annually of heart disease. The American Diabetes Association states that approximately 40 million Americans are living with diabetes, and more are diagnosed every day. Despite well-publicized guidelines on appropriately managing heart disease and diabetes, implementing risk-reducing practices remains poor, and the rates of worsening health for Americans living with diabetes and heart disease continue to increase. At Midland Health, we hope the shared experience among COACH and CODE support group members will benefit our community members and patients through lasting relationships built with group members who have similar feelings, worries, treatment decisions, or treatment side effects. Participating in a group allows you to be with people likely to have a common purpose and the potential to understand one another. Group discussions can focus on topics like interventions to lower blood pressure, blood cholesterol, blood sugar, and body mass index to improve overall cardiovascular health and the management of diabetes. COACH and CODE is a place for relationship building to feel less lonely, to reduce stress, and to talk openly about your feelings, about your health journey, and health desires. The support groups for heart disease and diabetes initiatives are to help all members gain a sense of empowerment, understanding, and hope, while assisting each other in improving their knowledge of the disease while managing their care. This free community support group started in August of this year at Midland Memorial Hospital in the private dining room. The group will meet every second Monday of every month throughout the school year from 6 to 7 p.m. Please join us if you feel you might benefit from the support and fellowship of others on the same journey to wellness as yourself. Children's Health. Study links 1-year-old screen time with delayed development. For 1-year-olds, spending 2 or more hours a day in front of screens, for television, video, mobile phones, or other digital devices, may increase their chances of experiencing developmental delays in subsequent years, according to research published in the journal JAMA Pediatrics. Based on data on 7,097 children, the study found that as screen time increased, so did the likelihood of developmental delays, primarily in communication and problem-solving skills. For instance, Children with up to 2 hours a day of screen time at age one were 61% more likely to have delayed development of communication skills by age two than were those who logged less than an hour a day of screen time. Risk was nearly five times greater for those with 4 or more hours a day of screen time. Delays linked to the infant's amount of screen time also were found in their development of personal and social skills, as well as motor skills, arm, body, leg, hand, and finger movement. Children's health experts generally take a less-is-better stance on children's screen time, instead encouraging physical activity and personal face-to-face interactions. Guidelines from the World Health Organization say, quote, sedentary screen time, end quote, such as watching TV or videos, is not recommended for infants and should be limited to no more than an hour a day for two-year-olds. In JAMA Pediatrics, the researchers noted that the data for their study did not differentiate between educational and other types of screen time. Quote, because it is difficult to limit screen time in general in today's world of electronic devices, end quote, they wrote, quote, it may be beneficial to identify and limit the screen time aspects that are associated with developmental delays while taking advantage of the educational aspects, end quote. Wise not to ask Alexa, Siri, how to perform CPR. Study. Ask Alexa or Siri about the weather, but if you want to save someone's life, call 911 for that. Voice assistants often fall flat when asked how to perform CPR, according to a study published Monday. Researchers asked voice assistants 8 questions that a bystander might pose in a cardiac arrest emergency. In response, the voice assistant said, I don't know that one. Sorry, I don't understand. Words fail me. Here's an answer that I translated, the Indian Penal Code. Only 9 of 32 responses suggested calling emergency services for help, an important step recommended by the American Heart Association. Some voice assistants sent users to web pages that explained CPR, but only 12% of the 32 responses included verbal instructions. Verbal instructions are important because immediate action can save a life, said study co-author Dr. Adam Landman, chief information officer at Mass General Brigham in Boston. Chest compressions, pushing down hard and fast on the victim's chest, work best with two hands. Quote, you can't really be glued to a phone if you're trying to provide CPR, end quote, Landman said. For the study, published in JAMA Network Open, researchers tested Amazon's Alexa, Apple's Siri, Google's Assistant, and Microsoft's Cortana in February. They asked questions such as, how do I perform CPR? And what do I do if someone does not have a pulse? Not surprisingly, better questions yielded better responses, but when the prompt was simply, quote, CPR, end quote, the voice assistants misfired. One played news from a public radio station. Another gave information about a movie titled, quote, CPR, end quote. A third gave the address of a local CPR training business. ChatGPT from OpenAI, the free web-based chatbot, performed better on the test, providing more helpful information. A Microsoft spokesperson said the new Bing chat, which uses OpenAI's technology, will first direct users to call 911 and then give basic steps when asked how to perform CPR. Microsoft is phasing out support of its Cortana virtual assistant on most platforms. Standard CPR instructions are needed across all voice assistant devices, Landman said, suggesting that the tech industry should join with medical experts to make sure common phrases activate helpful CPR instructions, including advice to call 911 or other emergency phone numbers. A Google spokesperson said the company recognizes the importance of collaborating with the medical community and is, quote, always working to get better, end quote. An Amazon spokesperson declined to comment on Alexa's performance on the CPR test, and an Apple spokesperson did not provide answers to AP's questions about how Siri performed. Mayo Clinic Minute: How young athletes can reduce their risk of injury. More than half of children in the U.S. ages 6 to 17 participate in sports. With participation also comes the painful reality of injuries that happen during gameplay. Dr. Wes Troyer, a Mayo Clinic physical medicine and rehabilitation physician, explains how to reduce children's risk of sports injuries. From strikes and strains to footwork and fractures, injuries can happen to any young athlete. Reducing the risk of injury starts with an annual physical to make sure children can participate. When it's time to play, warm up muscles by stretching and use protective equipment when appropriate. Quote, it's important to try out your equipment before you get into game time situations to make sure it works properly, so that it's actually protecting you when you're going out there to perform the sport, end quote, says Troyer. Try to avoid overusing certain muscles over others. Repeated motions can happen around growth plates and may require young athletes to pause certain activities. Quote, they need time to rest because they've put too much stress on the area, and without that, they just don't heal, end quote, says Troyer. If children are injured playing a sport, keep them out of competition until they can be evaluated. Quote, the worst thing that you can do is get up and try to play through these things and make the injury worse, end quote, says Troyer. Mental health, teens and depression, a back-to-school concern. With many teens heading back to school, peer pressure and academic expectations are once again a reality. These added pressures can cause ups and downs during what can be an already tumultuous time of life. For some teens, though, the lows are more than just temporary feelings. They're symptoms of depression. Depression is one of the most commonly diagnosed mental disorders in children, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Teen depression is a serious mental health problem. It affects how teenagers think, feel, and behave, and it can cause emotional, functional, and physical problems. Although depression can occur at any time in life, symptoms can differ between teens and adults. What to look for? Signs and symptoms a teen may be depressed include a change in his or her previous attitude and behavior that can cause significant distress and problems at school or home, in social activities, or in other areas of life. Be alert for emotional changes, including feelings of sadness, which can include crying spells for no apparent reason, frustration or feelings of anger, even over small matters, feeling hopeless or empty, irritability or an annoyed mood, loss of interest or pleasure in usual activities, loss of interest in or conflict with family and friends, low self-esteem, feelings of worthlessness or guilt, fixation on past failures or exaggerated self-blame or self-criticism, extreme sensitivity to rejection or failure and the need for excessive reassurance, trouble thinking, concentrating, making decisions, and remembering things, ongoing sense that life and the future are grim and bleak, frequent thoughts of death, dying, or suicide, watch for changes in behavior including tiredness and loss of energy, insomnia or sleeping too much, changes in appetite including decreased appetite and weight loss, or increased cravings for food and weight gain, use of alcohol or drugs, signs of agitation or restlessness including pacing, hand-wringing, or an inability to sit still, slowed thinking, speaking, or body movements, frequent complaints of unexplained body aches and headaches, which may include frequent visits to the school nurse, social isolation, poor school performance or frequent absences from school, less attention to personal hygiene or appearance, angry outbursts, disruptive or risky behavior, or other acting out behaviors, self-harm including cutting or burning, making a suicide plan or a suicide attempt. Treatment. Treatment depends on the type and severity of a teenager's depression symptoms. A combination of talk therapy and medication can be effective for most teens with depression. If a teen has severe depression or is in danger of self-harm, he or she may need a hospital stay or may need to participate in an outpatient treatment program until symptoms improve. While antidepressant drugs often effectively treat depression and anxiety in children and teenagers, their use in children and teens must be monitored carefully, as rarely there can be severe side effects. Antidepressants carry a Food and Drug Administration black box warning about a risk of increased suicidal thinking and behavior in some people under 25.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, September 2nd. Kinetic expanding into New Mexico. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Houston and Midland-based Kinetic Holdings is expanding north into Lee County, New Mexico. Company management tells the Reporter-Telegram The move will be transformative for the company and is part of a long-term strategic vision to expand operations further north into a new market within the Delaware Basin, as well as provide New Mexico producers access to its world-class gathering and processing system. The expansion project includes more than 20 miles of new large-diameter, high-pressure pipeline going north from Kinetik's existing gathering system in Loving County into Lee County, New Mexico. The expansion is supported by a substantial minimum volume commitment under a long-term gathering and processing agreement with a large-cap investment-grade counterparty, and the company has recently executed another gas gathering and processing agreement with a new customer in Lee County. Management tells the Reporter Telegram work on the expansion is proceeding as planned and on budget, with construction and permitting progressing well. The expansion is expected to be in service in the first quarter of 2024. Once completed, the expansion, in connection with Kinetik's Delaware Link project and Permian Highway Pipeline expansion, the company can offer an integrated wellhead to Gulf Coast Solutions to New Mexico producers. New Mexico volumes will be gathered on the company's super system in Reeves County that consists of the Raptor and Alpine High systems with a combined 2 billion cubic feet of processing capacity across five gas processing complexes. James Taylor, senior energy analyst at East Daily Capital, wrote in a recent report that the addition of front-end amine treating at all of Kinetik's processing facilities has allowed the pipeline to expand into New Mexico, where the produced gas is off-spec due to high carbon dioxide and hydrogen sulfide content. Quote, East Daily has tracked Kinetik since the company went public in February 2022, combining the former Altus Midstream with BCP Raptor, the owner of Eagle Claw Midstream. We were bullish on the merger, which created the largest pure-play midstream company in the Permian Basin. Since forming the company, Kinetik has added new pipelines to interconnect the Raptor and Alpine High systems, Taylor wrote in his report. Kinetik currently forecasts it will exit 2023 at flows of about 1.6 billion cubic feet per day on its Delaware super system, which is in line with East Daily's forecast in Energy Data Studio. Assuming the new 20-inch pipe into New Mexico will bring 200 to 250 million cubic feet per day onto the system, KNTK is well situated to handle additional volumes through spare processing capacity, Taylor added. Kinetik managers told the Reporter Telegram they have seen significant volume growth on its systems, recording record processing volumes in April of 1.52 billion cubic feet per day, and continued to experience volume strength during the second quarter, with volumes up 25% year over year and setting a new company record for quarterly processed volumes in the second quarter. This, they note, despite heat-related impacts to the company's May and June processed gas volumes. In its recently released sustainability report for 2022, Kinetik reported adoption of Orion software to help with carbon accounting and emissions forecasting. It was one of a number of initiatives the company undertook last year, including pneumatic upgrades, installation of electric compression, leak prevention, advanced emissions monitoring, renewable energy uses, and other operational improvements and efficiencies, management told the Reporter Telegram. Not only does Kinetik expect to exit the year with flows of 1.6 BCF, management puts current installed processing capacity in excess of 2 BCF per day. Not only does management foresee filling the spare capacity it has today, but also the prospect of adding processing capacity as the company looks ahead to 2024. UT Lab, Oxford, partnered to expand emissions analysis. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Energy companies, along with their academic partners, have been working on ways to reduce or eliminate emissions, beginning with gathering accurate measurements and accounting. Now they're taking those efforts across the ocean as Europe eyes strict limits on methane intensity in the natural gas it imports. The Energy Emissions Modeling and Data Lab, an initiative of the University of Texas at Austin, Colorado State University, and the Colorado School of Mines, has formed a new research partnership with the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies in the United Kingdom. For David Allen, co-director of the EEMDL and the Melvin G. Kurtz Regents Chair in Chemical Engineering at UT Austin, the new partnership fulfills two goals. He told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview that the lab brings to the partnership its expertise in gathering the data and making it reliable and usable. The Oxford Institute brings to the table its expertise in policy making, quote, with particular expertise on what is going on in the European Union and in the UK, end quote. Allen told the Reporter Telegram he has worked in the emissions modeling space for more than a decade, and he finds the transformation compelling. Quote, if you look back a decade, there was almost no information, he recalled. When we went in with our first of its type technology, it was expensive and difficult. Now we have quality information on the concentrations of methane near pipes and can translate that into reliable information, end quote. Through its partnership with Oxford, he said that information can be put to use in the marketplace and in a policy context, allowing the EU to decide who they want to provide natural gas to the various countries as they scrutinize the methane intensity of the potential imports. That, he acknowledged, could open up European markets to Permian Basin natural gas producers. He noted that the Biden administration has committed significant quantities of U.S. liquefied natural gas to the European Union over the next few years. Quote, it's clear the U.S. is going to play a critically important role in supplying Europe and becoming a supplier of cleaner natural gas, Allen said. A number of Permian Basin producers are seeking to have their natural gas production certified as responsibly sourced, and Allen said there are a number of certification systems emerging, but it is the EEDML's work that can underpin those efforts. Quote, what they all rely on is the underlying measurements and converting them into information about greenhouse gas emissions across the natural gas supply chain, he said. They need reliable, consistent, scientific tools around that information, and at the lab is how we make that information as reliable as possible, how we make it useful to decision makers like the EU, end quote. EEMDL was launched in January 2023, a model developed by researchers affiliated with EEMDL, the Fugitive Emissions Abatement Simulations Toolkit, or FEAST for short, was used by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to evaluate the role of new technologies such as drones, aircraft, and satellites in methane regulations, such as leak detection and repair programs, also known as LDAR.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.